and welcome to GFW Radio. It is July 22nd, 2008. See, I got the date right.
You even got the year right that time.
And I got the year right. I left for a month, and I came back, and I've got my calendar straight. We're back from E3. The regular crew is here, though sadly we're still missing Sean Malloy. I'll just say it, because we're all thinking it. Fuck you, Sean, for going to Blizzard. That's all I have to say.
Damn his eyes.
Come back.
I'm just kidding. I'm happy he's there. No, I'm not. We got a special guest here this week. You heard his natty English accent for 1 second just now. Mr. Rod Humble from EA.
Hello, everybody.
You're like the head of the Sims franchise? What's your title?
I'm head of the Sims studio.
Oh, even better.
So it's the Sims and SimCity and MySims and those wonderful web things we do, like Carnival, that you guys love.
So you're kind of a big shot.
Well, I don't know about that.
We'll take you down a few pegs.
I think you will. if the pre-chatter is anything to go by, I'm in for
Ryan
a rough ride.
Disagree with Ryan about the status of DC Comics characters. He will.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Getting pretty harsh.
So Ryan and Sean are here too.
Hi.
Hello.
And Skip is producing. He's wearing a Brewer shirt and he's all clean cut looking. It's really kind of creepy. There.
Okay, so
that's where we're at. Okay, so
you're leaving at 3:30.
That's right. We have a hard stop today. We're going to podcast for like a little over an hour because I'm going to see Dark Knight. So there, I'm admitting it.
That's
on
a good
air.
Reason.
I'm leaving midday to go see the Batman movie. Well, it's not midday.
Yeah, it is.
Late. It's okay, midday. It's midday.
Ryan approves. Have you seen it yet, Ryan?
Hell yes. I saw it opening night.
Day one.
Yeah.
Did you take your fiance?
Uh-huh.
Did she like it as much as you?
She was, yeah, she's
did
totally
she want
into
to go
movies.
Or
oh,
did
yeah.
you drag her?
She's as big of a geek as I am. Yeah.
Or is she just pretending that?
No, she's...
Because she likes
she
you.
She comes from a family of nerds who play D&D and
wow.
love Lord of the Rings and have
okay.
posters right. of Middle Earth on their walls.
So she's not humoring you.
No, she's into it.
Is there Joker cosplay in your future this year?
I do not believe so.
Okay. Well, you never know. She could want to dress you up. She tried to dress you up as Doctor Who. She did dress you up as Doctor Who.
She did?
She did not. That was half my idea. Those are like normal
but,
clothes.
But yet she didn't
shit,
do
I
it.
Don't want to know.
I did it.
You're, it's for like
you guys
convention.
Often talk about bedroom antics.
Yeah, see,
the,
I don't want to know. The, yeah,
it's like no, that
not,
scene in
Trinity. Not that kind of dressing up.
There's oh, like the, okay. Well, in that case, I'm, now I look like the sick one. That's,
where's that, your mind? Gosh.
There's the scene in Trekkies where the couple run Star Trek Dental. You seen that, Rod?
No. What?
They run a dentist's office, and the theme is Star Trek, and they take turns dressing up. And then when the interview is you know asking them you know who dresses as who, it turns out that the guy dresses as I don't remember the psychic chick from Next Generation. I don't remember
me.
Her name. And then the wife dresses up as Data. And then it kind of was, it just went from this normal discussion about like, oh, look at, there's phasers on the walls and all this stuff. And it ended up in their bedroom with them. It reminded me
God.
Of where we were going with Ryan's.
I can see that.
This you is all for conventions.
Deanna Troi. I remember it. Yeah.
I have a boring life.
So before we start, the thing I was bitching about yeah. Batman, it's just that, I mean, I don't know, it could just be anti-hype or whatever, but I mean, I'm so, anytime you go online anywhere, like I was posting some pictures and I was using like TinyPic or whatever, you know, some image hosting service, and they have like the sample popular pics, and they're yeah. always of like the Joker or something. They look like they're just designed for cell phone wallpapers and stuff. And it reminds me of, you know, like when The Crow came out. And it's just like the saddest element in high schools throughout the country and like the tastemakers at Hot Topic. It's like that store in the mall that sells you like a Jack Skellington sweater or something and tells you you're punk rock for it. Like, I don't know, man. It's just designed for that. And then there's the other additional thing. I think anytime there's someone who plays a psychopathic character well, mm-hmm. it gets a little more like attention than it deserves. Like, you know, in my mind, like Matthew Modine's performance was superior to whoever played Private Pyle in Full Metal Jacket, but it's like because the crazy character stands out. I mean, you think of this all the time too. I mean,
sure.
you know, Nicholson and The Shining, and these are all great performances, but it's like people just really latch onto it. Whoa. Like, it's like, you know, it's like play the retarded character
right,
or the autistic
sure.
one or, you know, Sean Penn and his.
Right. Play roles. Rain Man and get an Oscar, yeah. that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So maybe it's great. I just.
It is hard. I mean, it's totally hard to know. It's impossible to know what how this reaction would be if Heath Ledger hadn't died, right? I mean, if we'd be going through the same thing hype-wise that we are now.
Like Brandon Lee in The Crow.
Right. It's exactly like that. Yeah.
And also, too, seeing that something about, I mean, I know it's comic books, but when I see a trailer and I see a millionaire in a Halloween costume riding a motorcycle with, like, machine guns and rockets on the front, that's just silly to me. I mean,
well,
I always...
you're bashing Batman in general.
No, but I always...
That ain't right.
I did like Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli's Year One, and that's where, like, you know, if Batman was dressing up as Bruce Wayne was dressing up as anything, it was like as, like, a bum or something with a shopping cart downtown. And, I mean, they brought in some things, some of the, you know, the bad accoutrements at some point in there, but it was just toned down enough where, I don't
well,
know,
I
that guy goes by in that motorcycle.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet, and the trailer does... worry me just because Batman Begins I love so much because it was so not about that, about all the gadgets and just the special effects. Like, it was so low key in terms of that. Like, you didn't even see, you know, the shit on his utility belt or even the Batman persona till like a good, you know, 90 minutes into this movie. Right. Whereas the TV commercial and the trailer online is just all about the explosions and the and the motorcycle, but I don't know. Maybe that's just how they make
the movies start.
That's how they make commercials. I don't know.
The movies start. Well, look, talk about people playing crazy characters. Jack Nicholson as the Joker in Burton's Batman was great, but then that series went down the line where it was increasingly just for like yucks and toys. Mm-hmm. So like the last one, Shoemaker or whatever,
the George
it had
Clooney
like
one?
Every yeah, it had like yeah. every character and vehicle and thing in the Batman universe. And so it was like, is this going that direction?
It's really hard it's to believe Chris to... Nolan would do that.
This movie is similar to Batman Begins in that way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a bit more James Bond type stuff, you know, as yeah. far as, you know, but it's not.
I heard there's a lot less Christian Bale, or a lot less of him, you know, acting brutally. It's like, it's more about the Joker than it is about Batman.
It's about the Joker and it's about Harvey Dent.
I'm still really impressed how the film industry can turn on that level of public awareness. I mean, I guess yeah. I'm an inhuman machine who believes in marketing, but I'm like, wow, how did they get that buzz going?
You know? I know, I agree with you.
I mean, films just, they snap their fingers and it's like front page coverage on CNN. And
yeah, it's weird BBC. How it happened with this movie. Because yeah. Batman Begins, I mean, it got some hype, but not like this. It's like all
having
of a sudden,
one of the key cast members die during production is,
I guess,
one way
yeah.
to get the hype machine going, sadly.
Yeah.
But
I guess. That'd be a good studio strategy, is kill off one
of your... I don't think it'll work for games. Our programmer died, so... and?
Yeah,
you have your character. Someone lost the code for... You'll never be able to put him in a sequel. You'll never be able to replicate that sim.
Oh, right, for an in-game character.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, it won't work.
I still have a sealed copy, Rod, of Sim Copter.
That's a good game.
Yeah.
That had one of the coolest Easter eggs ever.
That's why I still have
yeah,
it sealed
that was
for
cool.
future eBay selling.
That was a good game.
Imagine your wife overhearing that. Like, if you guys were in line together to see Batman.
Such nerds.
The sealed copy of Sim Copter.
But it's cool.
Yeah.
I actually had that at E3. I was like, I I've been going to E3 or CES for, I don't know, 18 years. And I'm still, like, giggling like a schoolboy when I'm, like, standing in line to the games. I guess we're going to see some games. What's going on?
Yeah.
So which ones were you giggling for this year?
This year, I saw, I told Jeff at the show, I loved Valkyrie Chronicles, Sega's PS3 title, which is a, well, let me get all of the letters in. It's a turn-based first-person shooter with tactical role-playing elements. It said, of course, in an alternate World War II where the Japanese characters are saving England. That's a given. So you put that, the you know, that's a obvious.
How do we arrive at that?
but the gameplay I picked up, I was like, this is awesome. This is really fun. Huh. You know, they've got opportunity fire as you're moving around. You can, the shooting, when you go to shoot mode, everything pauses for you so you don't feel stressed. I liked it. It's like, it's my kind of shooter.
I remember seeing it at their editor's day they had a while ago, and it was really bizarre. I mean, everything you're saying is, and I also remember the art style too was very cool
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, it's very hand drawn.
Yeah, like almost. A right, looks like a kind of painted thing. So, yeah. So was that like your
that
game of the
cool.
show, quote unquote? Or
for me, it was. Yeah, yeah. Apart from obviously every EA game, which is
of
fantastic.
Course. Uh-huh.
But no, I love that. I what else did I see at the show? Oh. I guess it's Sega's day. Space Siege, I thought, was
I didn't see that over there.
Yeah, it was really
cool. There's so much I missed.
Yeah, it was a good show. And the indie section on the Indiecade was really good.
Didn't see that either. How did you see all this stuff? Did you have to, like, sitting here? Why did you see more than we did?
I just slack off. Yeah.
We should hire you.
Because we were assigned to cover certain beats, you know, so it just meant not being able to see other things. Like, I didn't get to see Sony's section. There's a bunch of stuff at Ubisoft I would like to see. We just weren't allowed in there. Yeah. I heard about a number of different things. It's like, oh, shit, those were at the show. I missed them. I wanted to ask you, though, this show, a lot of people were reacting negatively to, you know, like Nintendo's press conference and stuff. And as being someone who's in charge of a mass market and, a franchise that just goes beyond the typical person that read that updates that hits F5 on 1UP all during E3 week. You know, what did you make of Nintendo's press conference?
I think Nintendo can do whatever they want this year. That's, I mean, really, I don't think they've got much to prove to us. And I think that I could have done without them telling me just how well they'd done because I already knew. But right. I guess it's kind of good news. I was like, okay, you know, you did really well. I thought Wii Music was exciting. I liked Animal Crossing. And
it kind of odd, though, watching, for anyone else watching...
The drama guy?
Well, not even that. It was more when Miyamoto came up, because I swear to God, his Wii looked like Uncle Sam drew it in 1942 or something. And then he's up there playing.
I got to touch him, the C3. First time I've ever met him, and I got to touch him.
Really?
He came to EA's booth, and our general counsel who handles the relationship with Nintendo said, hey, we're going to need somebody to basically be a gopher and cart him around. You know, have we got some spare exec? And I was like, yeah. And so I got to do it. He was awesome. He was just totally like, you know, who are you little people? But mm-hmm. but was very interested in the games. He loved, not surprising given he's a platform designer, he spent a lot of time on Mirror's Edge of like, how do you make a first person platformer? Hmm. And then they took him downstairs and he was jumping up and down on skate. And it was just great to see him excited at games, because I guess he does that tour every year. So we went to Microsoft and Sony to check out their stuff. And it's a privilege to see him go around and to see him as excited as
I would think that would be terrifying. You know, you don't want Miyamoto like looking at your game and just, you know, scoffing or whatever.
I don't think he'd ever do that.
No.
I don't think he'd ever.
Were you able to get any insight from him? I mean, just get him to open up and talk about candidly about his thoughts on what he was seeing?
No, I burbled Miyamoto-san I don't know whether my head touched the floor as I bowed, but it was pretty deep. And then I sort of shuffled around with him, with various Nintendo execs saying, is he happy? Does he like that? Is he done now? Should I move now? Yeah. Would you like a Coke?
Nice.
It
just seem too presumptuous or something, even for someone in your position?
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty crazy. I mean, this is like a caste system in gaming development.
No, this it's a respect issue. I mean, the guy's there to see games. He's obviously got a short time. I don't want to bug him.
Right.
If he wants to go out drinking, Mr. Miyamoto-san, I hereby invite you if you want to go out drinking.
Yeah, and if he's like soliciting your questions and your opinion, then it's clear.
Yeah. But I mean, most people in gaming, and I assume him as well, but they're just geeks and nerds.
Yeah.
And Will Wright's just a great guy to hang out with.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
He's just funny. And you saw the EA event, and I wasn't allowed to say it at the show, but you know, I was telling Riccatello it was basically nerds on stage, mm-hmm. and you know, wanted us to go and join arms and tap dance across, but he didn't think that would work.
Yeah, Will Wright is amazing that way. He, you know, when you think about, I have no clue how much money he has, but it's got to be a lot, right? I mean,
I think so.
given his success, and you would never know in a million years if you were just like, I mean, I remember like two or three E3s ago when we were all piling onto the Southwest plane to go down to E3, and we saw him on the same plane, you know, in coach, and we were like, dude, what, take your
I
jet
feel like
down
Jesse
there.
Jackson, you know, in Southwest on coach,
huh?
Coming back from E3, he was Jesse Jackson was in coach
really?
In Southwest too one time, yeah.
Wow. Oh, okay.
It's a pointless anecdote. Dude, airfare, bet, save money. No, but it's cool to see, like, Will not. I mean, I don't know. There's, like, when people get a lot of money, it's like, what do? They invest in, like, jets and stuff. Or it's like, Will, you make your own BattleBot center and, you know, collect stuff from
I think Russian it's great.
Cosmonauts.
I mean, another one is, you know, Gabe Newell. I mean, that guy is, mm-hmm. like, the least pretentious guy you're ever going to meet. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's all about the games. Mm-hmm. Are they fun?
I insulted him on my live blog. He's probably never going to talk to me again.
Well, yeah, I've just said something nice about him. So it makes
yeah,
up for it,
we're making up for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, did sorry,
you
get, Gabe.
I mean, are you in trouble? I mean, you were kind of playing a shtick for...
I was doing... It was
you
just,
thought you were your Yahtzee or something. Of the Yahtzee of live blogging at E3.
I
you
was
got
just...
in deep shit for it.
I did. I actually got cornered at the Rock Band party, you know, the Who concert. I got cornered before they let us in by a representative of EA and Take-Two, the two companies I live blogged. There were two PR people who came up, and they were each going to knee me in one testicle apiece. So,
well, I forgive you for the hair comment.
Thanks. I said you had a nice haircut.
I know. I didn't understand what the problem was.
I complimented you. Huh? I guess Take Two was madder than EA was, and actually think, the comment that. Was that I had more personal insults in there about like the presenters than I did at the EA one.
Well, it's texture. I think the audience needs to know.
I was just trying to say, like, here's what it's like to be sitting there, and whoa, that dude kind of looks like McCain. I mean, that's all I was doing. I didn't mean it in a bad way.
I still want to know because
I think McCain's hot looking.
We taped a podcast the day before you went to that and live blogged that, and we were talking about, you know, the Borderlands demonstration with Randy Pitchford, and then you went, of course, and you got the exact same thing. With the same level of excitement. But I heard that there were people that were kind of like laughing and giggling during that. And I just like, I don't know. I wanted to think that maybe they had heard the podcast the night before or something.
Yeah, like, I saw him do that shtick twice in a row. Once, you know, in the room where they were doing Borderlands and then once at the Take-Two press conference in front of a bigger crowd where he, you know, he's playing his own game or he's got a couple guys, you know, from Gearbox playing, and he's commenting on it. And nobody loves Borderlands more than Randy Pitchford. He can't get enough of it. It's kind of endearing.
That's great.
I mean, I don't mean to bag on the guy. It's just funny to watch because normally you get, you know, when you're getting a demo, demo.
The demo face comes on.
Right.
And whatever it is you don't like is beta. That's right. The rule. Don't look at that texture. That's going to change. You didn't like that, right?
Right, but he has none of the sort of nervousness or apologetic sort of like, oh, he's just sort of like, this is awesome.
It worked, too.
Yeah.
Because cool. If you looked at one of the, I think it was Kotaku's live blog of the same thing, there, you know, we were making fun of how at the end of this demo, did you see the Borderlands demo?
No, I didn't.
Well,
I hit 50,000 weapons or something.
Yeah, 500,000.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
And they bring out this character at the end, and it's just like the most random. You know, I compared him to like an NPC quest giver in Auto Assault, you know, to give you an idea of just like how his role in the larger universe now, his importance. And the guy comes out, and they act like it's the biggest cliffhanger in any gaming demonstration you've ever seen. And they're like, that's Mordecai, but you don't get to see what he does. And, like, there were people that, you know, when they live blogged, they're like, oh, God, here comes Mordecai.
Yeah.
And they're like,
yeah.
No, yeah. We have to wait.
As if Darth Vader had come back or something. Like with some big, humongous, like, yeah, I know. And for those, I mean, some of us sitting there like us, we were like, what? Like, sorry, we're not going to tell you about Mordecai. I'm like, okay. Well, good, because we wanted to leave anyway.
So, Rob, in demonstrations you've given, what's the most excited you've ever had to be about something that you probably suspected your audience wasn't anywhere near as excited about?
Well, as you can tell, and as my wonderful PR handler will assure you, I'm not the most dynamic person in the world. So for me to come in, you know, I'm not going to bound onto the stage totally pumped. It's just not me.
Yeah.
But I've done a lot of demos where, and I've tried to get out of the habit, but you do catch yourself when you start doing the apology demo,
mm-hmm.
which is, it's like the amount of times, like, and it's not like this game because of X. And by the way, that feature isn't in yet. And it's early beta. And well, actually, you know, although it's nearly final, we're shipping next month, we're still changing a bunch of stuff that you've just said you didn't like. So mm-hmm. Don't worry about that. And you know, yeah, it's gonna sell great because we say it is. And what? Oh, yeah, that did have a bad review, but that's okay. That was a different publication. So yeah, I've had those gently backing away as I'm demoing something until I sort of talk myself into a corner.
So
they're the worst.
Are you ever demoing a game where you just either you know the game isn't that good, or you just get the feeling that it's not going over well while you're demoing it, like you're sort of in a flop sweat, like, I can't wait to get the hell out of here.
I've had a lot
more. These guys are hating my game.
I've had a lot more of B.
A lot more
I mean, with A, Yeah, I genuinely get enthusiastic about most games, although possibly not as enthusiastic as this Borderlands guy. I got to see this.
Yeah. But again, no offense to Randy. I mean, we're
happy. No, I think that's awesome.
Not at all.
But it's just, it was just a weird like disconnect between his level of excitement and our level of anticipation for Mordecai's demise.
Well, it's just, you know, when somebody's being that enthusiastic about their own thing, it's kind of, there's like not much room left for you to
right.
also like it. Like, well, glad you're enjoying it so much. Well,
you're right. Randy maybe isn't daring to me because he reminds me of my dad. It's like whenever you go to visit him, he's got to show you everything and take you on these tours. And no matter who's with me, like I'll go with my girlfriend and he'll insist on taking us down to his garage and showing us all of his guns, and like he'll make, you know, like Melissa hold them all. Here, try the action on this, you know, go ahead and load it up. And Melissa's just horrified, you know, no interest whatsoever. But it's not just stop, you have to go through every single gun in the arsenal. So it's kind of like that, or like,
but not 500,000 of them.
But yeah, like he's just got like 12 instead of 500,000.
500,000 is awesome.
We're just clowning on Randy.
So when you,
but I've had those interviews where I just know it's gone south, you know, the pointed questions come.
Right.
Which is not at The Sims, of course. I've never had these questions, but at other places, you know. Uh-huh. And how do you feel this is appropriate to this franchise? Words such as "Do you think that this game still has legs after all these years?" Or "Why should I be excited about this title?" That's always a giveaway, right there. Is right. After I've just told them for half an hour why I'm excited. Yeah. And why would I be excited about this title? I don't think you're going to be. I pretty much think you hate it.
It seems like it'd be even more awkward, though, like if you had sort of come in locked and loaded with like a number of buzzwords. A lot of times, you know, games, the promotional materials, everything will be, if it's not trademark, it's patent pending, right. You know, and it's like, and it's just another, just words for doing things, their actions that we're already accustomed to doing. But then when they're
dynamic
like
weapon change.
Yeah, I with think. The buzzword. Then yeah, that seems like it would get awkward. And then the old one, it's like I bring it up a lot because I swear I've seen it hundreds of times over the years. And that's where someone's pointing out that they've got Havoc physics. And that means that every time you shoot someone, it's going to be a different game. Because they're going to fall a different way. And like, I mean, I don't know. I've always wondered what it's like to be the person to have to tell me that with a straight face.
It's pretty awful, but people generally don't ask me to do that anymore because I just flub it.
Yeah, they quit.
I can't talk about Emergence anymore, you know.
Oh, yeah, that was the big thing for
right.
That one, although it's accurate for The Sims games, I just can't say it anymore because I'm just tired of it. It's because people roll their eyes and fall asleep. Yeah. It's like, yeah, we heard that before.
Or to just demonstrate something that really is interesting and emergent, you know, and not having to really attach a name to it. I think it would just speak for itself, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of like some of the stuff, you know, Peter Molyneux has been talking so much about the things in Fable, and it's like if half the time, you know, half the demos I've seen, to give him credit, are been when he's telling you what you can, there's like just a screen, and the game's just on in the background with nothing happening, and he's telling you about all these things that can happen in this canvas, but instead if he just showed me, I would be...
But Peter Molyneux, he's one of my heroes, because, you know, just like Will Wright and Miyamoto and all of these legends who have been around for such a long time, the thing I really admire about him is, first of all, they're still working. You know, they're putting in the time, they're putting in the hours.
Yeah.
And secondly, all of them have just been kicked in the teeth and flopped at some point in their career where people are like, that's it, you jumped the shark, your career is over. And they just dusted themselves off and said, nope, I'm going to get back to making games. Mm-hmm. I love those guys.
And they've, I think, like, Peter's, like, even the movies, I think it was ahead of its time, you know?
It's
that had come out, like, maybe now or in the next couple years and it was all online. From the beginning, it was like a free online game or something, like a Battlefield Heroes, you know.
Well, I love Black and White. I thought Black and White was great. I know that there was a big to do about it, got, you know, too many good reviews, but it's still a great game. Mm-hmm. Like you open up, it's like, hey, that's really cool.
Now,
once you hit the hardcore puzzles, maybe it.
I'm glad that there are people like him. I mean, otherwise, who's going to be making those games right now at that budget? You know, I mean, we'd see them on the various, you know, Xbox Live and places like that. You know, but.
Which reminds me, Puzzle Quest expansion's out today, right?
Oh, don't tell Ryan that.
Ryan loves
hardcore
that
Puzzle
game.
Quest nerd.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think I'm waiting for the sequel.
Galactrix?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That looked cool.
I tried to weasel a pre-release copy at the show. I may have succeeded.
Oh, yeah?
I know that one of the ladies who works there, she used to work at Sony. I was like begging. Come on, I won't steal ideas, please.
So when you say sequel, you mean like the plot continues?
I think it's a sci-fi one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's...
Oh, so it's set in a different universe.
Puzzle Quest in the future.
Okay. So maybe there'll be like a comic book in between the two to time together.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe an animated comic book. be pretty cool.
So, Rob, what's some of the least likely places you and the people you work with have drawn inspiration from the games that you make? Since you bring up Puzzle Quest, it doesn't immediately come to mind. I mean, it doesn't even have to be within games.
I could prompt you a little on that one. I'll let you talk. But as soon as you asked that, Sean, I thought about when we came to your office for the Sims 3 cover story, and you showed Sean Malloy and I all those prototypes, all those different games you made, where you had all the different developers were assigned to prototype a game based on what was it? It was a certain concept.
We did a bunch of one day prototypes. One was on caring. Some of the ones are kind of weird, I guess, is a lot of study of ethics through the ages, because when you look at ethics, a lot of it is how you treat human beings and what those edges are. And so that's really of interest to The Sims, is how far we can push it, and at what point does it cross a certain ethical line. So, Kant on ethics is one of the bizarre. It sounds awfully pretentious, but it's true.
Hey, you can. There's the escape clause, because like all Star Trek, the Next Generation episodes are all basically based on Stuart Mills and Kant and all these. I mean, over and over again, these same dilemmas and scruples.
Utilitarianism, right? And I think computer programmers in particular, we're fascinated by the idea of ethical rules. It's like, yeah, can we program a set of rules that cover it? No is the answer, but it's a noble thing to try and look at, because it's really interesting, how you can get math to fit ethics.
What about the temptation to
the lamest answer I've ever given to anything in my life?
I'm letting you off the hook. What about the temptation to be inspired by something, and then just have this drive to want to incorporate it or some facet of it into the game when either you're the only enthusiast for the idea on the team.
Oh, I've been there, yeah.
Or just a daily thing, right? I mean, you work from a design doc, and there you have it. And it's not like, when I was talking to the guy, the marketing guy for Postal 3, and he didn't seem to be able to account for a lot of the things in the game. In that game's case, it seemed as though it really was a matter of, you get an idea, you just throw it in,
Right. I run into that a lot. There are things that I think are particularly cool. So when we made Open for Business, I was obsessed that everyone in the world would want to run their own bookstore. So we had to have the deepest ability to create your own bookstore in the Open for Business pack that you possibly could. Turns out nobody else really gave
no one
down
cared
about
bookstores. Bookstore.
I did, but
what did they want to do? What kind of businesses did they want to run?
First of all, they wanted to make houses of ill repute. They figured that out real quick.
That was the first.
Boom! They can't figure
this
out.
Man. Yeah. You give them a chance to become professionals.
Then a lot of restaurants. A lot of people, which I guess is right. Yeah, everyone sat in a restaurant and said, "I could do this better."
So brothels and restaurants.
That's
sex,
right.
Sex
running
and
a
food,
restaurant is another weird, ubiquitous thing, and right. I mean, like, say if you're an immigrant and you come over, and for the first generation, you're starting a business. Often, you do what you know, and it's run a restaurant. You have that end of the spectrum, but then you have all these people who are already, rich and wealthy and well-to-do in their society. And then what do they want to do? They talk about retiring and opening a restaurant. Yeah. We've had even Shane Bettenhausen works here. And one time it came up, what else would you do if you're not doing this? He said he wanted to open a restaurant. It's like, what?
Shane?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a human need. But I was one of those immigrant guys who came to, when I first came to the States, because I'd been brought up in a fairly small village in England.
You had limited options, man. We can open a fish and chip restaurant.
Yeah, well, English, we have many strengths. I don't think food is one of them. But I was one of those sad immigrants, sat at the food court at the mall going, I can't believe how many choices there are. It's fantastic. Look at this. Look, there's Chinese. There's everything.
They all suck.
They were all fantastic to me. Okay. I was from England.
Right.
And outside of the city. Trust me. It wasn't boiled. It was great.
Right.
Maybe
right.
It took you 10 years to cross the ocean or something. Because I'm sure you have the same range. You got stuck in the Bermuda Triangle because I'm sure you have the same range.
No, man.
Because if you look back here, right, in our day, what are your choices? You get a cracker or you get chicken and a biscuit. That's the extreme end. And nowadays, it's sun-dried tomato and cracked pepper. Or you can get it with curry on them and any. I mean, there's just so much more variety now in general, to go along with, the changes in demographics in the country and stuff.
Well, the little known fact. that the it is a fact, I assure you, is if you get a chance and you go to England, eat at Kentucky Fried Chicken. It is it is better in England than it is in America.
Really?
And I take the taste test. That's my I'm not an investor, but you really should.
The English chickens are tastier or something?
They actually, so that you get little lemon soap paper napkins, the chicken is less greasy, the sides are different. It's
so
just
the whole
nice.
Experience is just nicer.
It's a finer dining experience.
Can you rub the chicken leg on the wall and see outside?
No, you can't. It really is better.
So is it called?
It's one of the few things that you can eat that's better in England than here. Huh. So I'm pushing it.
Hey, I'm a big fan of. I next time you go, send me up some Round Trees fruit gums.
That's good stuff.
That's my number one candy now.
That's all right.
I'm curious now about this Kentucky Fried Chicken.
You got to try it
in England.
You got to try it.
I want confirmation from some English podcast listener. Go to our forum and confirm whether. Rod is full of shit.
So
or not
Sims 3 is like it has in-game restaurants, and on the back, one of the bullet points is like not the American.
God, that'd be
KFC.
Good. If I was that evil, that'd be so.
Based
awesome.
On the Manchester, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
You got to do the comparison though between America and the UK.
Okay. Yeah. How are you even going to get those two in one place for that taste test?
You do what I do. You eat here. You get on a plane. You get off the plane. You eat there.
You're that rich.
You need.
Make some chicken in your bag.
It's not a private plane.
Okay.
They see it. Makes all the difference.
I guess I might believe you. Can see that.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. I can believe the aesthetic experience would be better, too, that you'd get, like, better sides and, you know, it'd be...
Well, the English service isn't particularly good. I mean, it's polite, but you get abused. So, you know, it's a kind of a balancing act.
Depends on which KFC you go to here. Like, KFC in Berkeley, where we live... And, like, all the restaurants there, like, right on San Pablo, they've got, like, bulletproof glass and stuff on their drive-thru.
Yeah, they do.
Like, something's up. You know, like, the state of a town by how, like, if you can't use a public restroom, you know, it's a fucked up place. Like, even, you know, Barnes & Noble, they don't have the bathroom. Or, like, when Taco Bell, when there's bulletproof glass to conduct a transaction. So, it's like, I'm going to give you $3, and you're going to give me... a fucking two tacos, and it's like a Mexican standoff, you know, or it's like trading items in Fantasy Star Online.
Yeah. I'll put down the food and you put down the money at the same time.
Yeah, we'll both run. Yeah. Each other. Like, you imagine like people pointing guns. I wrote like the stupidest like short story about that where like it was about going through that San Pablo Taco Bell thing. And there's a, you know how there's actually, they trust their employees so little that there's a little like, a digital readout that says your total here. If the total that the employee quotes you differs from this, please call this number immediately. So I just changed it so that was actually a button that went directly to the local police department. Like if you press that, and it ended with like, of course, them like, you know, basically pointing guns at each other, like over the getting the 2 cents back and change.
We were talking about that before the podcast though. But to me, like I'm from England, so I don't care that my son like plays with toy guns. It freaks my wife out because to me, guns are like bears. You know, they're not real. They're not going to show up at your house anytime. It's like bears, guns, they're not real. They don't happen. But over here, it's kind of a big deal. So she freaks out.
That's really interesting. So like growing up in England, there isn't this sort of like, because certainly in my house, both when I was a kid and then as a father too, there was a big thing about like, you know, don't let, like to this day, and my daughter's 14, I will not play games where I'm shooting things on screen just to not badly influence my kid.
That's because you're a Berkeley dad.
Well, that's true. I am a Berkeley. I'm living in Berkeley in California with a French wife who's very left-wing, and et cetera.
Most of our parents will just turn on the most fucking repugnant shit. So I let it play, and you give you BB guns and toy guns. They used to be black and look exactly like
I played Army as a kid in Los Angeles, but my parents, who were kind of hippie-ish, frowned on it too. So I did this behind their back. Like, we wouldn't do it at my house, but we'd go to one of my friends' houses and we put on our army fatigues and shoot each other with sticks back then. But
all I had given was toy guns when I was a kid.
So there wasn't like a stigma from your parents or
none at all. Because, you know, what was going to happen? It wasn't like I was going to go and get one.
Right.
It was England. So my first memory is playing with toy soldiers in a sandpit. And then my first big toy was a plastic M16. You pulled the trigger and it made a noise. It was awesome. was so cool. So we used to run around the garages and at the back of the house, and we all used to play. And I was the king of the roost until I smashed it.
So is your wife American?
Yes, she is. Yeah.
Okay, so if you brought home an M16 for you have a five-year-old son?
Yes.
Well, let's say you came home tonight with an M16.
Oh, toy one, right?
or a toy one.
Sure. Yeah, or a toy one. All right, we'll go with a toy one.
And handed it to your kid. Would your wife be pissed?
Yes. No, it would go immediately into the trash.
Really?
It's different now, too, though. Like, first thing would be, like, if it was bright orange, would might make some difference. But, I mean, then there's the other case. You give, like, the kind of guns that we played with as kids to your kids now. They'll go in the street and a police officer will shoot them or something, you know?
Like, right. Yeah, even if, like, say it was, yeah, like, purple, bright purple with... whatever
would be frowned upon. I might be able to swing it maybe one or maybe, but if it was a water pistol.
What if it
but
was she's a Nerf Uzinator?
I don't know.
Wait, what if it was a... Let's just do it this time for the next half hour.
She's getting, you know...
Hey, you said you like ethical scruples, man. We're holding you to it.
The first time that he opened up on my one-year-old daughter with a Nerf bullet, not like, boo, and knocked her over, I think I would be in trouble for it. So, right. Because I'd be the arms dealer bringing it into the right. Bringing it into the country that's a failed state. So
how is she about gaming in general? You're a game developer. It's your profession. I assume you're also a gamer.
Yeah.
Is she a gamer?
No. She disapproves, I think. Mildly disapproves of what I do and would rather wish that I had a different kind of career. She's not into it at all. But again, I've it's a bad time to ask, because the other day she came home and my son was running around playing Army, which is very unusual, and so that raised her eyebrow. And then he said the phrase, Dad, we're going to make our own Bad Company. And as she knew the title of the game I'd been playing, Bad Company, she was not. And then he said, by the way, Mom, Dad, let me blow up the buildings and pull the trigger on the gun. And then I was just totally...
You're busted. Yeah, you got to train him.
Totally death charge.
Don't talk about games in front of Mommy.
Right. That's you know, phrases you don't like to hear. Don't tell Mommy. Yeah, that's...
On the topic of guns, to reassure you, I don't want to let this opportunity pass by, but also to reassure you that you guys are both good parents. Like, when we do it, we had BB guns, and I remember my friend Alvin, he told us, Thane, who was with us, he's like, go change the target. And then he pumps the gun like 10 times and shoots him in the ass, like, as he's as he's changing the target. And it's like, why'd you do that? You know, because Thane's rolling around the ground screaming, and you look at Alvin and ask him why he did it. He's like, because it was funny.
Wow.
Kids and guns. It's good stuff.
Well, I shot guns in Boy Scouts, so that's how I
responsibly.
I learned to shoot guns.
Yeah. Had some...
Well, that's a
loving father-like figure.
Right, it was like a basically like a Jewish Boy Scout troop. We weren't exactly thugs, you know. We were going straight from Hebrew school to the, you know, rifle range, and pretending we were shooting Nazis. Went home and had our chicken soup. I don't know. Whatever.
Where's the
stop me talking? It's not going anywhere. I'm just talking. I'm just. Let's move on.
Those were the good old days. So that's interesting. You're saying that your wife. I mean, of all the franchises you handle. I mean, there has to be some people in gaming where they're like, if only I wasn't working on Postal 3 or something. I was working on The Sims. Then my wife would understand.
Yeah, she doesn't like it. My brother, who lives in England with his wife, he and his wife loved The Sims, and they loved it before I worked on it.
That's great. So does that validate you a little bit more?
Yeah. Although if you met my brother, it's annoying because he's just much more likable than me. So I don't try not to talk about him, so people don't get to meet him.
I wish your brother was on this podcast.
I need to see it. That's the way all growing up.
Next week, Rod's cooler brother.
He is. He's cooler, and everybody who meets him, like all my friends growing up. Like, I try not to let them meet my brother because they all preferred him. They're like, hey, your brother's really cool, man.
That's you got to put
no,
him
he's
in.
Not.
You should put
he's
him
right.
in Sims 3 as like some big dork.
That's my revenge.
Some guy that everybody hates, wants to kick his ass, you know.
then he'll be sorry.
Sort of the village idiot, you know, wandering around and knocking on the Sims houses. Hey.
That'd be good. I like that.
So you got to be somewhat nervous. Not that like there's much likelihood that the next Sims is gonna tank or anything, but I mean, given given its built-in success so far, I mean, that would be pretty horrible, right? I mean, like, what is that your worst nightmare? Like, say if you take this unstoppable franchise.
Right. And stop it?
And you're associated with
it. I kind of like that, actually. Drive it into the ground.
Yeah.
You know, I'd probably, like, you know, have a bigger name by doing that than actually doing a good job. Right? I'd be like, well, sure, it's, you know,
the,
whatever.
The man who killed the Sims franchise. Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Well, I mean, I get that every time we release a game. Because the sad truth is, and I wish it was the opposite, but the sad truth is that no franchise name will sell a game for you. It just won't. I mean, and God knows I've tried. You know, slap the Sims name on something and it does not equal sales. Our customers.
Do you think that that's true across the board though? Like, I remember, like, when I was surprised when Medal of Honor Rising Sun came out, and I thought it was a mediocre shooter,
right,
at least by the series' own standards, and it did over a million like right away.
Right.
I mean, you could disagree with me on that, but it's like, I mean, I think
I wasn't just,
I can think of cases where it's like, I'm pretty sure that the brand's playing a pretty significant role. And the fact, of course, look at how many sequels, right, that EA publishes.
Right.
I mean, there's a reason they're publishing sequels rather than new IP. I mean, EA does publish new IP all the time. There's many coming out this year, but there's a reason why they're mixing those eggs in the basket and not.
I'd say that there's a difference between franchises that have an aspiration to them, like being a hero in the Pacific, versus one that is gameplay oriented, which is The Sims. You know, I don't think that there's much of there isn't a aspirational fictional fantasy associated with The Sims that's as strong.
Changing diapers.
Right. You know, it's sort of what you make it. So I think that the gameplay really does matter.
Wait a minute, though. Let's see if that's. I just want to challenge that. I mean, because when you look at the expansion packs, and again, I speak from like.
Which are fine products. I'm happy to defend the expansion
packs. But aren't they aspirational, right? I mean, they're about you get these houses, you get an HM pack, you get to go on the shopping sprees that you maybe can't really afford to go on in real life. I mean, people who can buy Sims can shop at H&M or whatever, right, but they're not going to be buying everything in the store in the way that they will with expansions and stuff. I mean, I don't know, like yachts and all these things that you get in Sims. I mean, it seems fairly...
That is true, but that's based primarily off a lot of focus groups we do with each pack. You know, because we want without wanting to use the business word, because we want to repeat business, you know, we don't want to mess it up. And some packs do sell a lot less than others.
Mm-hmm. In this case, what I'm bringing up about the packs is not that it's a matter of, you know, like cashing in on the name or using the name to sell itself, but the aspirational thing, though. You know,
right.
I mean, you're saying that, like, in, you know, Medal of Honor Rising Sun, you're saying, okay, I want to be, you know, an American GI in the Pacific Theater, right, World War II. In this case, I mean, I'm saying. It's kind of like aspirational lifestyle, right? Like people watch Cribs and stuff like that, and it's like here in The Sims, you get to put together this perfect world. And
I think it's extra tools that you can use to be creative. But I think that the great unspoken secret of The Sims is the people who play it, I don't think regard the game the same way as people who don't play it do. So I think the people who play it would say, yeah, I tell stories, but that's because I'm creative. It's, you know, it's stuff that I do. I don't think that someone who buys, you know, Seasons is saying, I'm really attracted to the idea of winter or these things. They're like, hey, I've got extra tools to tell my story. So I think it's a little bit different. But I know what you're saying. I guess I talked myself into a corner.
Do you think that people who, you know, who use The Sims to tell these stories are largely, like, you know, aware or self-reflexive of the stories they're telling and about what they say about themselves? I bring this up because, you know, Sean Malloy was on our staff, and
right,
we did this, you know, this series of essays on, you know, the way that we play games, you know, and what it says about ourselves. And in his case, it was about The Sims. It was the franchise he used. And
it changes a lot. So Sims players, when you talk to them, one of the things I find most interesting is when they change from third person to first person mid-sentence. So, you know, a lot of Sims players will say, I went on a date, but my sim messed it up. You know, that's a really interesting
thing. Yeah, it's weird.
I think that each person's gameplay within The Sims is different. So, you know, I don't think it's unusual for a lot of core gamers to play The Sims to have sex with lots of chicks. And, you know, it's like, I'm going to make the dude, and we're going to do this. I'm going to make how my house looked when I was that age, and we'll see what happens, you know. I think that is one of those unspoken things that a lot of core gamers do.
And you got it. Like, you can thwart those expectations.
No, it's all right. I embrace it. I think it's good stuff. I also think, well, I know that a lot of core gamers buy The Sims and the expansion packs, whether they want to admit it or not, because we talk to them.
Was it a closeted activity among all?
You know, for some reason, I think when it comes to online gaming forums, I think it is a little bit. I think that so we do a lot of reach out to our customers, and so what we'll do is we'll have focus groups for each pack, and before they come in, you ask how much do you play, and so we'll say things like, you know, we'll have a bunch of guys between 16 and 25, all of whom play The Sims 10 hours a week. And then once they get in a room together, we'll say, how often do you play? They're, well, you know, I pick up my girlfriend's copy occasionally. And
that's awesome.
You know, what do you do in the game? Yeah, off camera, they've alone, they've said, you know, they do furnishings and they like building little houses. They go, well, you know, bank chicks, you know, that kind of thing. Guess. Get to the top of the career ladder, you know. I can get back to playing COD 4. Kick a little ass.
If only awesome. You could, like, you know, take that footage and then juxtapose the two and release it. Like, well, I really want. I'm really hoping that you put in, you know, more colors of paint for the walls and stuff. I mean, I really felt limited that way.
I was at the E3 conference. I mentioned spiral staircases, and there, I believe there are a couple of reporters in the audience who were brave enough to cheer, and they were like, "Oh wait, no fuck." Not meant to like spiral staircases. Spiral staircases are good. You can do a lot of cool houses with them. You know, it's all right.
Has an opportunity for an IKEA-themed expansion pack ever come up?
We've just done our IKEA stuff pack.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
I'm not kidding.
You should
it's
be in
real.
Marketing, Sean.
And it's number one in the charts. It knocks Spore off the top.
Did it?
That. There you go.
Take
Booyah.
That, Will Wright.
In your
so
face, right?
Like, you know, what you aspire to is just like imitating your... I mean, what's that about? Is it like you say, but there's a game that's got
dig
that's
out
got
of the IKEA
life,
one,
my life in it. So then, my life must be good. They're making games about it. I mean, like, what's going on there?
I mean, I think that a lot of the reason for the Sims success is just if you go into a bookstore, look at the amount of categories of drama, romance. You know, there's a whole swath of categories that just games generally don't cover, and The Sims covers them all. Mm-hmm. So we benefit.
I would like to. I'm not one of those closeted Sims players. I'd like to.
Sure, sure.
I'd like to find. I mean, I like the idea of it, and I'm glad
you're
that
wearing
it
a Sims shirt, though. The users can't see that, but that's okay, man. That's all right.
I like that just for the style. Yeah. It came with the expansion pack. I threw the expansion away.
Kept the shirt.
Yeah. But I like the idea of it, and it's like I want to be able to get into it. But the one time I tried it, it was the Xbox version.
Right.
And it was just like...
That doesn't count.
This character needs to, like, go to the bathroom every 10 minutes and needs to sleep. And it's getting irritable. And it really felt like babysitting. I was like, what the fuck do I want to do with this?
Right.
But I heard about all the great stuff. People like, you could make them go crazy and build them in a tiny room, you know? And I didn't see none of that. I just saw a guy that had to crap his pants every 5 minutes and got cranky if he didn't sleep every 30.
You had to take care of him, Sean. It's your responsibility.
I totally get it. I was like you once.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't like this.
Before they started paying you a lot.
That's right.
Yeah. Hey, I want to know in the IKEA expansion, do the Sims have to make their furniture?
No, they don't.
Do they have to go through an IKEA, find their way through that thing? Because then you can introduce some cool navigational puzzles.
No, you can get it and build by.
The pathing would be so difficult.
You can make your own IKEA store if you'd like.
Oh, you can?
Yeah. I'm sure that's a fantasy. Man.
Yeah, then you have to eat because, you know, you have to eat every 10 minutes or whatever it was. You can get your lingonberries and meatballs. And
that's all good stuff.
Keep hitting it up. But IKEA, that seems weird to me, too, that like someone, I mean, that would be like having a Walmart expansion in a way. Because, I mean, IKEA furniture is like, it's like Tinker Toy stuff, you know. It's like shitty. I mean, when I look at it and I think about how living standards have changed,
high quality product.
And you look at like, sure, it, you know, a century ago, far fewer people had really high quality furniture, but the ones that did, it was real nice handcrafted stuff. And you look at this, and it's like it's all particle board with a sticker, the color of wood on it, like everything.
But if you want to make your life when you're in college, you know,
then you need it.
Then you'll need it.
My CD towers are IKEA. I admit it.
Most of the shit in my house is IKEA. That's all I can afford. I can't lie about it. I mean, I have it, but that's the difference between saying I need to get a game where I can get the same shit, digital version. Will it break when I move it once?
Well, that's why I want The Sims to have to make
bottom of the shelf sag.
I want them
fall
to get
out.
All frustrated at the instructions, you know, that have no words on them.
It's a fantastic pack.
So
I
what
heartily
what about
recommend
the Walmart
you buy it.
Is, huh? Do you think that's like out of I mean, is that beyond comprehension that there would be a virtual Walmart Sims pack?
We choose
dollar
our
store.
We choose our partners. Carefully.
99-cent store expansion pack.
Dude, no, there's something. I mean, like the Walmart. A lot of people go in there. I was at a Walmart in Clear Lake this weekend. It was some sad shit. I mean, all Walmarts, I think, are sad fundamentally. I'm speaking. This
They're
is not our
as sad
guess.
As a 99
so in case you
stores.
Are, in the, I don't want to like hurt your ability
I'd just like to say
this deal.
Okay, if I might just say, because Walmart is one of our biggest customers.
Oh yeah.
That it's a fine store, and yeah. I particularly right. think that their publishing buyers who buy our products for their shelves are great human beings.
That's yeah. Rod so, Humble, yeah, Electronic Arts.
My opinions have nothing
Saving
to do
his ass
with,
again.
With Rod Humble, our guest. In fact, he probably finds them odious. But I think Walmarts are personally depressing even when there are no people in them. But this was the one where, like, all jokes aside, every single person I saw in there was obese. Like, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I'm not. And it was also about, like, 98 degrees out there. So that meant that the obesity
you could say
was
that
on,
about GDC.
On extra display. Yeah. This was far worse than GDC.
Good point.
Because, like, yeah. Melissa was like, look. And I was like, okay, what am I looking at? Because every direction I'd look, there was something, like, noteworthy, right? It would be, like, blog-worthy or something. But then, like, behind us, there was this one.
Isn't
was,
Walmart, like, the biggest games? I think a lot of your they listeners don't, probably don't buy their games from Walmart.
They don't sell my magazine anymore. So their clientele, the supreme clientele.
Now I see.
Yeah, it's all bitterness.
I called Fupa and Flapjacks because she was wearing a bikini top and it was pretty gross. And her toenails looked like cellophane tape wrapped up.
Oh, God.
And I had to get out of that place. Sorry.
What were you doing there?
I was looking for, I don't know what we were doing, getting some snacks or something.
Nothing is sadder
I was there
than,
buying
the,
marital aids.
Than the new 99-cent store by both of our house, Sean. Have you been in there yet?
No.
Oh, the right by your place.
Yeah.
That's great for your property value. Yeah, tell me. I know, this thing has been like three different things, and every time it goes down the socioeconomic scale,
and it's,
which is just a bad sign.
And it's so, sad, though, because the building, it used to be a theater
It
or
used
something.
To be a movie theater,
Yeah,
yes.
It's got a really like high roof, you know, with some kind of cool architecture.
Then it was some kind of market, some kind of supermarket. That
it was like
failed.
A Rite Aid or something.
Yeah, then it was a Long's Drugs.
Long's, yeah.
Long's Drugs failed, and now it's a 99. And before, we didn't know what it was going to be, and we were like, please be Trader Joe's. Be something.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Something.
Well, no, you don't want that. The traffic there.
Whatever. I'd take the traffic if it would just not be, you know, another blight on the neighborhood.
Sorry.
Along with the check cashing place and whatever the other crap that's around
Yeah, that's
there.
What they can have inside there, check cashing.
And, place. Yeah, so it's a 99-cent store now. And I went there on my first day back from Europe, and it was just the worst possible cultural transition whatsoever to go from, you know, Italy and Spain and nice places in there into the 99-cent store on San Pablo Avenue in Berkeley. It was just like, oh,
why,
fuck. Just,
why
I can't
would that,
believe I live
why
here.
Would that be the place you go to on your first day back?
It's well, like, I didn't go there because, like, I missed it and, you know, I couldn't wait. I needed something there, which is why you go to a 99-cent store.
What did you need there? What did you
well,
need?
What I needed was a cheap pair of sunglasses because I was about to ride my motorcycle into the office and I didn't have any sunglasses. So I want, and in fact, I didn't have any when I walked out of the store because I bought them. I walked to my bike, and as I was putting the things on, around my ear, one of the arms broke off, which is you know, kind of a you get what you pay for.
Hey, Green, nice glasses.
Yeah. So
here's a good tip for because I used to go to 99-cent stores. Is there is an age between 2 and 4 years old where kids can't tell the difference between a toy they get at a 99-cent store and one you bought from a toy store. You just go in, you go, son, you take whatever you want.
It's
he's like a prince, right?
Oh, yeah.
At the age of 5 and above, they learn that the Hulk skin is green, not red, or whatever it is at the 99-cent store.
Yeah.
Well, that's the old thing about, like, you know, you buy your kids present at that age, at that young age, and, like, they play with the box more than the kid.
Yeah.
There's some then choking just, like, hazards learn. In there, though, man. Do you want your kids, what if that stuff is made with lead? Let's be responsible, really.
I'm the guy who lets my kid play Battlefield Bad Company at 5. I've left responsibility behind.
Yeah.
But you had him just shoot the building?
Yeah.
That was it?
Yeah, just shoot the building.
I think he's
not gonna, actual people.
Not he's people, okay. No. He'll survive the trauma, I think.
So what about
he's
what
a demon
about,
at Mario Kart? He beats me.
Really?
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
So is your wife cool with that? Like you guys playing Mario Kart together?
Yeah, yeah,
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
How about you gaming on your own? Is that something that you'll do, like, at night, and does your wife frown on that?
Or? That's generally an issue where if I go down to the study and there's a new PC game I can't play on my laptop, she gets annoyed because she likes me upstairs at night. But if it's in our bedroom playing a console game or on the laptop, she's very happy with it.
Also, it's the company.
Yeah, it's the company.
If you're there, yeah, goofing off with games, yeah, but you're in the same room as her, she's cool.
Yeah, yeah. She doesn't like the computer basically becoming the other woman. You know?
This is right. The trouble with PC games. I heard this again and again. You know, Robert Ashley talks about the same thing. You know, when we got him into PC games, it's that like you could be, I don't know, you're more accessible if you're sitting on the couch looking at the TV,
yeah,
than if you're just in your own world with a pair of headsets on screaming at people in Ventrilo or something on the computer. I mean, then it's really like turning your back on someone.
But she got into Metal Gear Solid 4. She was into
really?
It. She started off with like, what the hell is this plot? Because she was just listening to it constantly go on and on. And then we both kind of got into it. Like, we were like, I really want to know what happens.
Did she watch the whole thing?
That's great.
Huh?
She watched you play the whole thing?
Yeah. Yeah, she liked it.
Was she satisfied with the ending too?
No spoilers.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't played it yet.
All right.
No spoilers.
Did she like the whole bit about turning a 1 to a 0 or the 0 would turn to a 1 if you didn't turn a 0 to a 1?
That was pretty clever, I thought. The other game was the... The other game she liked was Grand Theft Auto 4 because she hated the killing, but she was like, go on a date. No, don't dress that way. So she wanted me to dress up. Right.
She was giving you dating tips?
She was giving Nico dating tips because as we know, right, it wasn't...
Does she like The Sims?
Doesn't like it.
How did she feel when she found out that Nico's dates would basically respond to anything as long as it was new, no matter what it was?
I think that's our little game of secret. I think
you didn't let
that really isn't. So it's like we built up a relationship.
Yeah,
I thought it was really cool that you could go on a date in Grand Theft Auto 4 and go and watch a Ricky Gervais stand up contest. I mean, that was like a cool moment. You know, it's like yeah.
I felt like it was fun, like I was dating a blind chick, though, because I would hit up basically the equivalent of, like, the Russian dollar-only store, and I would grab shit without looking at
which
it.
Which one's the blind chick?
Well, she's not really blind.
She might as well be blind when I
got in the car wearing, like, this fucking clown outfit of random shit I grabbed in a hurry. She's like, oh, nice new shoes. Nice new jacket. Ding. Nice new shirt.
I do like that they gave a shit if you didn't change, though. Yeah. I like that. That she would comment on it if you didn't.
She knew it.
Right.
The car. Steal a car with her in the car, and then she'll compliment me on the new car.
Which I can't remember. Would she say anything if you jacked a car in front of her? I can't remember now.
Not when I did it. That was the thing I was complaining about. I mean, this is nitpicking, but yeah, it's like I took her on a date, and this is the very same one where she was saying, you know, I'm worried about your connections. You know, I don't like, you know, violent people and stuff. And on that same date, I took her into, like, you know, to Chicken House and beat the shit out of, like, everyone in the fucking restaurant with her as a witness and got back in the car. And then she's just like, I'm just glad you're a nice guy.
I love the fact that some of them, Nico took one of the chicks to the strip club, and she was appalled. But one of them was into it, which I just thought was hilarious. Yeah. The nurse. She was into it. She was like, you like those ladies?
Huh. It was good. Wow. Yeah.
She was into it.
Yeah, she was into it. Spoilers, sorry.
Did your wife see you go to the strip club?
No, that was a little game of time.
A long time for that scene. Yeah.
Did you feel dirty about it?
Oh.
I did. I felt weird in those scenes. I told you before we podcasted that I stopped playing GTA when I got to the mission where you basically had to wipe out everybody in the strip club because I... You know, usually my wife's home when I'm playing that, and I just didn't. That was like everything bad all in one room. You know, the strip club and killing everybody. It was like, wow, I just don't need her to see me playing this. No, so I'm going to validate everything she hates.
Yeah. I wouldn't do that in front of my family. That'd be after they've gone to bed. But yeah. I mean, the reason I love those games is so I can be the most evil person.
I mean, do you feel like, but the fact that you're waiting until after they go to bed, I mean, you feel like you're pulling like the issue of high society out from under the couch when everyone's like tucked in for the night, you know? Like,
well, I mean, some of it's, you know, some of it is entertainment that you like.
It's got to be that way.
It's not stuff that's family appropriate.
The kids will get old enough and you could say, hey, it's time to learn about some games.
Yeah, I don't know whether I'd ever share that moment with my kid. You're confusing me now because I've got a daughter as well. It's wrong.
Yeah,
I can't even think about this anymore. No, it's just wrong. I'm moving to Antarctica when she becomes a teenager.
Well, that's weird. Like the way that it would break down. Like Jeff, you got a daughter who played World of Warcraft, and personally, I mean, this is just, you know, speculative.
Sure.
But I think I'd probably like be less concerned about my daughter, you know, when she was like 14 or something playing GTA than I would about her playing Warcraft, and that's because I'm a strong believer in people's ability to, you know, to differentiate, you know, fantasy, you know, portrayal of, you know, fantastic scenes from real ones, other than, you know, sociopaths and people who have things, you know, wrong with the neuropsychology, and then also being in communication with real people who might be predatory or who might just be mean or whatever the case may be. I mean, when you're dealing with other people, that's like, it could be probably it's more dangerous playing Habbo Hotel than it would be, I think, for most
right people to play. I mean, it's funny, as she's gotten a little older here now, I'm more concerned about that than I was back in, you know, when she was like 8 to 12 and playing World of Warcraft, or when did she start playing? I guess around 10. Because, you know, there was more innocence involved there, and just it wouldn't even have, like, crossed her mind, you know. And she just had a good head on her shoulders all along about, you know, not talking to strangers, quote-unquote. Whereas at 14 now, I would believe that she, like most teenagers, might be more susceptible to some shifty kind of...
There's
talk.
Like the virtual equivalent of making your daughter wear like a long dress or like, you know, baggy pants or something. That's make her role male characters in every MMO.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you're kidding or not, but actually that
you have to be a dude.
Yeah,
you got to be a troll.
Well, or a troll female would be fine because they're pretty ugly. But actually, I mean, she's out of it anyway. So she followed the standard teenage demographic, which I'm sure Rod, you have studies on this, and maybe it's different for your own franchise, but when she hit 13, gaming stopped being really kind of part of her life, and she got way more into just social networking shit. So for her, it's all Facebook and MySpace and instant messaging and all that. So she'll game a little bit with me, but for the most part, she's out of it.
That's why Rod's been working on integrating Facebook with and MySpace with The Sims.
That is our main competition. I mean, it's funny, most of the time when I get asked about competition with The Sims, it's, you know, what game, and really it ain't. It's generally social networking is what hits us the hardest, and that and racing games for bizarre reasons.
Same boys that are like keeping half of your games and your business division afloat are the ones taking away your audience in Sims.
Right.
When Jeff's daughter hits that age.
Yeah, but she's not interested in The Sims really either right
she's
now.
She's interested in boys, is what I'm saying.
The
boys are on
that.
MySpace.
We can't.
Yeah, we're not.
I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, no.
Well, we gotta.
No,
we
she's
gotta
not.
Face the facts.
No, she's
we
not.
We gotta be realistic here.
No, we don't have to be realistic.
No, we don't.
You got two dads here. We don't.
Yeah,
trust me. No, I'm just gonna stay in denial.
You know, I was thinking for a while there. At the risk of oversharing, for a while when she was younger, I was thinking, you know, I really hope, and we're all guys here, so we talk about this. I was really hoping that she might just be gay, because I was thinking, you know, guys fucking suck. You know, we do. As far as women go, we suck. You know, we don't treat them right most of the time. You know, we don't respect them. We'll dump their ass for somebody like better looking as soon as especially in teenage years. You know. Just like, it's like a bad scene back then. Boys are just fucking stupid, you know? And it's like, I don't want my daughter to have to go through that shit. Yeah. If she's just gay, she'll just hook up with some, you know, nice girl, and they'll like be, you know, like, you know, lesbian nerds together. And I don't have to worry. I can go to bed at night, you know, at 11,
you
not
worry. You
need
to see some Kevin Smith movies where he breaks down the types of lesbian.
See, this is the problem. But this is what I realized over time. It's like, well, shit, actually, girls suck too.
Yeah.
And she'll get heartbroken no matter what, you know. She'll fall in love with some, you know, whatever,
Yeah, I think you're just being a dad. Like, I mean, because you probably are thinking back to high school. You probably weren't like... Oh yeah, and I dumped like this chick because like her friend
was slightly
hotter.
I was
probably
dumpy.
Thinking like those bitches, like I wasn't good enough just because I was 15. They had to go and date that 21-year-old because you can get them boozed easier. Like, I mean,
well, I wasn't that.
No matter how you cut it, there's like guys and girls. Just people do rotten shit.
Right.
I was playing D&D.
The whole time.
That was my teenage years. Yeah, I was playing D&D and war games. That was.
I was playing.
I wasn't an asshole to women.
Yeah,
trust
I was
me.
Playing like Avalon Hill, you know, right. War board games. So yeah, girls weren't really in the picture.
Yeah. Now I think of it, it makes sense for me. There was that time when I was like, I didn't play so many games. But there were some that made it through there, that like Street Fighter 2 was always, you know, there was always time to bro down with some Street Fighter.
Yeah, do you remember? Do you remember?
Bro down? Is that what you said?
I'm going to look at Jeff because I think you two guys are too young to remember, which is sad for me to say. But do you remember there were like two CESs in a row where it was just Street Fighter clones?
Yeah.
And that was, they were sad times. It was like, oh, for crying out. And
the arcade in that era.
Oh, and I was hawking a few of them as well. And it was like, oh, yeah, it's a history? Fighting game, you know.
Did you hawk Fighter's History?
No, I designed a game called Brutal, Paws of Fury.
Oh, God.
And I thought that my, you remember it, God, I'm sorry. Anyway, right, yeah, I thought.
With Rise of the Robots. And
somebody made a remake of it, which I was just like, awesome. You could have picked a better game. It must have been the music, I guess, was good. But I thought that making a fighting game about animals on a journey to Zen spiritual enlightenment was like a market surefire thing. Yeah, I had the Dalai Lama, who was like a real llama.
Oh my god!
Really?
Yeah. And
wow,
you should have been designing
the rat
cards for
Hallmark. It was so good. It was great.
The character was called Dalai Lama, L-L-A-M-A.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he was a real llama.
That's fucking great.
Yeah.
It was great. He was sponsored by the Chinese government. Your whole project was funded.
Who else was it? I was Kung Fu Cheetah. He was one, I think. And Ree the Rat. And Ivan the Bear. Because it's not a cliche to have Russians associated with bears at all. Right. Yeah.
So when you were doing this at the time,
right,
did it seem cool to you, or did you know you were kind of slumming?
So the thing I regret most about it is it's funny looking back. I don't regret a lot of games that sold badly or got panned because I knew I did my best. The thing that really bummed me about Brutal was I know I didn't do my best because the original design was I wanted to have a huge scrolling screen, and you started at like you could basically fight your way through the entire castle, kicking people. You remember an old Commodore game called Bruce Lee, where you kick people off and like you could kick the guy off the ledges. It was meant to be that, but on a huge like multi-screen playfield. And eventually I like was working through it. I couldn't figure out the design problems. Went, sod it, we'll just copy Street Fighter. Which is harder than it looks, because it turns out Street Fighter's a really, really good design. There's a lot of depth to it. And so I really regret it because I just copped out.
Did you think you were even like up to spec with like Clay Fighter or like Shaq Fu?
Well, Shaq Fu, you know, that's pretty tough competition. at the time, I think I knew that it was, well, I did. I knew it was like, you know, that wasn't my best. Therefore, every bad review hurt, and every good review I didn't feel
was there. Was there like some sincere intention to take and spin off some of those characters into platformers? Like,
nah.
You know, like the whole Tie the Tasmanian Tiger and like Arrow the Acrobat. And
no, we would have. I mean, it's all good. And we could have done a sequel, but I just felt guilty about it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that's the same with your guys' work. Is if you've done your best, it doesn't matter if anybody trashes it, because you're like, I know I did my best. I'm really proud of it. But even if something sells good, if you know you didn't do your best, you're like, oh.
Yeah, you know? No, that's a good point. If I have done something that I feel is like not up to speed, and then people call me on it online,
or even if they say good things about it,
it feels worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It feels worse if they call you on it. I actually feel guilty.
Yes,
if people like
shit.
It. If people like it, you know, that I feel guilty then of like, yeah, could have been really
good.
Was
there like a fan club for the game?
I don't know. A lot of people I've spoken to, because I've done some talks at universities. There's usually one or two hands that go up. I'm like, hey, I played that game. Really hoping it's nostalgia talking.
You ever had someone roll up their sleeve and you see a tattoo of the
no,
Dalai Lama?
No. Although the guy who programmed the remake, you know, if he listens, thank you. It's very nice of you. The remake's better than the original game, so I think he fixed some gameplay issues.
How would you feel if it turned out that person did have a big tattoo of one of the characters?
I would think that's fantastic.
The coolest thing in the world would be if the Dalai Lama himself had a Dalai Lama tattoo.
That would be all right.
Or
awesome.
It turned out that he was a big fan. Yeah, gave his like blessing to
the
it.
The Dalai Lama. Yeah, that'd be all right.
Was it Dolly like D-O-L-L-Y, like Dalai Lama?
No, it was D-L-I.
It was
like
a clone
the paint.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's all we got. That's the end.
Yeah,
the Dalai Lama.
Yeah, we could actually go on. If it wasn't for me and my fucking Batman movie, we could probably talk for another
speaking about
hour or two.
Supporting crap. Might as well get on eBay and look for Dalai Lama merchandise.
Hey, come on. It's Chris Nolan. Funny. He's a good director.
No, it's probably good. Ryan says it's good.
If Ryan says it's good, Ryan, it's good. I heard it. Christian Bale got arrested today for like beating up his mom. Did you hear
that?
Yeah, did you see that? It's on the it was on the news
this
afternoon.
He's just trying to sell tickets.
You think? Yeah, that's a little more cred.
How cynical do you have to be to beat up your mom to sell tickets?
I don't, dude. I can't. You can't write parody anymore. It's like there's like the stuff in the news about pray at the pump. It's like people with like Ford expeditions, praying to God to make the gas price cheaper.
Praying,
like after that, like why is there even an onion or anymore? You know, it's like, this world's fucked. That's it. That's the end of the story.
It might be it could be a publicity stunt. Go beat up your mom. Because it'll give Batman more street cred. You know? he really is like a dark vigilante.
If it was like the guy who played Harvey Dent, maybe.
Maybe his mom was like stealing some like hotel soap or something, and you know, as Batman, he.
it's like the Punisher. He'll cut your hand off for stealing like a Snicker bar at 7-Eleven.
I don't think there's any situation where you can legitimately blame your mom for starting a fight.
Or beat up your mom.
It's like, well, she started it.
Doesn't that, it sort of heartens me that, you know, about like not being as like rich and successful as a guy like Christian Bale, that like, you know, okay, he's like, he couldn't be riding higher in the world. He's the star of the biggest fucking movie in the world right now.
What
the
are you gonna
box
do?
Office record, and he beat up his mom.
I'm going to beat up my mom.
Right. You know, that's.
You you're going to go, you're still going to go see it.
Yeah, sure. Sure I am.
Man, you should have nothing to do with that.
Because that guy died, and he's supposed to be great in it.
He's like, I was riding around on a fucking motorcycle with guns all day. The last thing I want to hear is you asking for some money to pay your rent. He's like, if that thing was real, I'd run you over with it.
Yeah.
All right, that's enough.
Okay. Rod, thanks for coming. I wish we had more time. Will you come back and talk to us some more sometime?
I'd love to. It was a lot of fun.
All right. Handler, will you let Rod come back? He's saying yes. He has a name, but we're calling him Handler because it's more sinister that way.
Yeah.
All right. Mr. Ames.
Mr. Ames. All right. We'll be back next week with more nonsense.